Welcome in on this Monday evening, Ryan Porth alongside Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio. You can hear him on these airwaves every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. Justin, how are we doing this evening?
I'm doing okay, Ryan. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. What? Why the chuckle?
I mean, it's been a rough past few games for the Nashville Predators. And I know we have to discuss this.
We do.
One of the things we have to discuss, break it down, see what's going on, give the people what they need in terms of analysis of it, but it's been a little rough.
Well, I think we would both much rather prefer talk about victories and not losses.
A little bit.
If I'm just calling a spade a spade. Saturday night was a rough one to sit through and watch, if I'm being completely honest. The first period, I thought they played okay, even though they were trailing 2-0 after the first period. But then they trailed 4-0 after two periods, and then they lost to Chicago 7-2 on home ice. The Saturday night home woes continue. I don't even want to get into that because it's such a quirky stat. Feels like an anomaly. But whatever. I mean, for whatever reason, they cannot win at home on Saturdays. But that's not why I'm concerned about this team right now. It's the fact that they've given up 22 goals in their last four games, and they haven't won any of those four games. And we were feeling really good about this team in October, and now November has not been the same. And I think all of us are trying to sit back and say, why? Why has November been a struggle for this team, and why did Saturday night happen in the fashion that it did?
And when you look at it too, I mean, shots aren't everything, but when a team is putting up 41 total shots on net and out shooting your opponent, you could lose a game, obviously, but you wouldn't expect the game to be a 7-2 final score. And even looking at the heat maps, that the Predators were still generating some high danger opportunities near the net. They're generating opportunities from the point, from the home area, in between the faceoff circles and everything else, but they controlled in terms of shots for the game, but obviously not on the scoreboard. So we're seeing a lot of this too, to where they'll control a game but still not be able to score goals. That sometimes they're just being unlucky, whereas before we're seeing, especially Nick Bonino, being very lucky, and throwing that word out, lucky, in terms of what he's producing out there. And you're not seeing that right now. You're not seeing the bounces go their way. You're seeing bounces go against him. You're seeing some, I mean, hate to say it, pretty bad goaltending as well go this way. And I know we can dive into that deeper, but the team overall has not been gelling. Some bad turnovers leading to goals. And it's not one player's fault. This has been a team breakdown in so many ways we've seen. And when you have a team allow 7-plus goals 2 times in 10 days, that's a bad look.
Well, I was interested to hear head coach Peter Laviolette's comments after the game, when I believe it was Adam Vingan who asked him, you know, how can you pinpoint the defensive issues that this team is experiencing? And Peter Laviolette basically said, well, there are a lot of different reasons why these goals are going in. It's not one thing defensively that is resulting in them giving up a lot more goals than they're scoring right now. And I thought that was pretty telling in terms of how many things that they may have to clean up just to get back on track, at least defensively.
Yeah, because sometimes it's a turnover, sometimes it's a defenseman screening the goaltender, sometimes it's a defenseman missing an assignment and leaving a guy wide open. So it's not one thing, just exactly what he said, it's not one thing. They have to clean up a lot of little things out there. And it's, again, it's not one thing that the Predators are doing wrong. The team itself is not doing a good job of covering the areas they need to be covering. They're not necessarily having great zone entries as well on the other end to push the offense. This is a team that's putting up a ridiculous amount of goals to start the season, and they still have that talent. The talent's still there. They really haven't been faced much with injury issues or anything like that. Our team's figuring them out. What is not clicking? Something's just not clicking right now, and we're seeing that, to where even if they play a decent game, they're getting walloped. And did Chicago remember what Pecorine said after that 3-0 shutout a few weeks ago?
Certainly seems so.
It seems so, because they chased him.
Well, you mentioned the little things, and not just in sports but in life, a lot of times the little things can add up. And the little things right now for the Preds are adding up, as they've lost 6 of 7. And I kind of felt like there was a state of shell shock throughout the arena as that third period was going on. Really, the second period, once Brent Seabrook scored the goal that he scored on to make it 3-0, kind of thought that deflated the atmosphere within Bridgestone Arena to make it 3-0. Backhanded goal, Pecorine should have had that. And then the Hawks make it 4-0. They chase Pecorine. Then Roman Yossi scores and make it 4-1. You're thinking, all right, well, if they're going to make a miraculous comeback, they've right. got to strike again right. right away. And there was some life in the building, and then that slowly faded, and then Patrick Kane made it 5-1, and it kind of spun out of control into 7-2 as the final score. And Colton Sissons joined Hal Gill and myself Saturday night on the postgame show, and I asked him, in the spirit of the fact that Peter Laviolette always says that that locker room is an honest group, what is the message moving forward? And here was his honest answer.
I mean, we all have to take a look in the mirror and be honest with ourselves, ask ourselves if we're doing everything we can to help our team win. And that answer is no. You gotta find a way to do that, because we count on everybody every single night. It doesn't matter what your role is. We're going through a tough time here. We're not mashing the panic button by any means, but a little bit of soul searching early in the year sometimes isn't such a bad thing.
That was Colton Sissons Saturday night on the postgame show. Justin, what goes through your mind when you hear Colton Sissons answer the question like he did?
Have closed door meeting, team only. Well, one of those things, because you can tell the leadership needs to get together and have one of those meetings where it's, I don't want to say railing at each other, but it's a redefine themselves. Usually a road trip is where you kind of find that. You have close time, brotherhood, we're spending a lot of time together. You're able to have those moments together traveling on the road, and that really didn't happen. Because after a road trip, we keep looking for the answer, right? After that loss to the Avalanche, thinking, okay, you want to see them come out really strong in San Jose, put a pounding to them. Well, they played an okay game, but they didn't come out with that fire and intensity you expect them to. Okay, you expect them to come back at home. After a long road trip, they're playing a division rival, Chicago Blackhawks, who they've done really well against ever since that sweep. And you expect them to come out with a little bit more, mm-hmm. at least to produce more. They came out, they fired the puck, but they weren't sealing the deal. And you have to find a way to make it happen. So that's one of those things that the team's got to get together. They got to figure it out themselves, because they know they have the talent to be able to make this happen.
Well, you mentioned it earlier in the segment that Chicago, it seemed like they were a determined team. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was Pecorine's post-game comments back on October 29th that maybe sparked that, of him saying that it was one of the easier shutouts that he has had in his career. I think that's what we were all saying after the Preds won that game 3-0 and completely obliterated the Hawks in every facet of the game. The fact is, that game for the Hawks was one of the worst defensive performances you will ever see in the sport of hockey. Mm-hmm. Just 2.5 weeks before they came back here, the sight of that performance, and they have been playing well ever since that game. They won again last night.
Yeah, they're on a four-game winning streak.
Four-game winning streak. They're 6-1-2 in their last 9 games, and they have now leapfrogged the Nashville Predators in the Central Division. So I don't want to take anything away from the Chicago Blackhawks. They're playing a lot better. They seem to be finding a little bit of a groove. After it was almost like that game was a wake-up call.
For them, yeah.
For the Chicago Blackhawks. And ever since that point, October 29th, the Preds are 1-4-2, with the one win coming against the lowly Detroit Red Wings.
That's frustrating, because they did to Detroit what they're supposed to do to Detroit, and then they haven't done that since. And you know, and we keep saying this and pushing this and bombarding this. This is arguably the most talented roster the Predators have ever had. Arguably, most talented roster.
You can make a case.
Yeah. Or one of. Top three, easily, out of their history. And yet, sometimes they act like it, sometimes they don't. So it comes down to the whole question of, what is it? Is it the system that they're running? Is it worn out? Not saying coaching necessarily, but is the system worn out, where teams have figured out how to play against that system, where you survive the peppering of shots and then you attack back? Is it that kind of thing? Because the Predators are scoring goals. When they do, it's on the rush. It's not necessarily always on zone time. It's on the rush. Things are happening. That's why the defenseman, Roman Yossi, we got the only 2 goals. You know, it's on the rush, setting things up to where it's not established zone time necessarily that is leading to Predators' goals. Mm-hmm. It's what are they doing on automatic rushes. It's what are they doing to get the defenseman involved in the rush like that, too. Is that a sustainable way to play and to go and win a championship?
Well, on Saturday night in the first period, they did have a lot of chances, but they didn't sustain much.
Right.
A lot of it was 1 or 2 chances, and then they're out of there.
Right.
They didn't sustain 30, 45 seconds at a time of cycling and generating chances and then finally busting the door down. It was a lot of, you know, pop gun chances where Rocco Grimaldi hits the post. Great opportunity, but it's not anything that was sustained. Robin Leonard almost gives up a what do you want to call it? A puppy of a goal? I don't know. It would have been soft as you know what, but it didn't go in. And then they couldn't sustain anything in that period. And Chicago just looked. They looked like the better team in the second period. Like, that's when it became evident that it was not going to be the Preds' night whatsoever.
And it's hard to run down a defense, to tire out a defense, if you're not able to sustain zone time. If you're going to wear them down mentally and physically, you have to establish zone time, cycling the puck, peppering with shots during a possession, not just on rushes. You can't wear them down that way because all they're going to do is come right back at you, and they absolutely did. And then you have a guy like Brent Seabrook, who's been a healthy scratch how many times, and is wanting to stay in Chicago, refusing to be traded, goes and scores that kind of backhanded goal. Like you said, that was a deflating type of goal because it looked like Pecorini was just fighting that puck the entire time and maybe didn't even see it till the last second somehow. But it was some sort of knuckle puck on a backhand, and that's deflating. That's a puck that he should have. But again, it's the entire team is at fault, but the goaltending has not been strong at all. There's been a few times now where they've chased the goaltender out, an opposing team has, and that's not good. The team has to play better in front of them, but a lot of these pucks the goaltenders have to have.
Coming up next, the Preds have made a handful of roster moves since Saturday night's game. We will update you on that on the other side. Plus, where has it gone wrong that has led the Preds to lose six of their last seven games? We'll get into that coming up next. He's Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio. I'm Ryan Porth. You are listening to Preds Insiders on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Ryan Porth, Justin Bradford here with you. Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Justin, the Nashville Predators earlier today recalled Steven Santini, defenseman, and forward Matthew Olivier from AHL Milwaukee. Yesterday, they reassigned Mika Salamaki back to the AHL. And I will be curious to see if Santini and or Olivier draw into the lineup tomorrow night against Winnipeg, because I don't think they're really making these moves just to have Santini and Olivier just to come up and be healthy scratches. So it should be interesting to see how Peter Laviolette utilizes those two, perhaps in the lineup as soon as tomorrow night.
Absolutely, and to throw to the bump music, the power of love. Olivier loves to hit. He's a physical guy, so I'm assuming one of the reasons you bring him up, he has 7 points in 17 games for the Admirals, who are in first place in the Central Division of the AHL. So Milwaukee's off to a strong, strong start this season, but he also has 37 penalty minutes in those 17 games. So I'm assuming it's the physicality for a guy like Matthew Olivier to bring him up, especially when you're playing teams like Winnipeg and St. Louis, divisional rivals this week, pretty important games as well for the Predators to get back on the right track. So I'm assuming he's going to play at least one of those games. One of the games this week, the Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, he's going to play a game. And like you said, Steven Santini, you don't make that call for a defenseman when you already have extra defenseman on the roster. You don't make that call unless you want to try to give him some sort of time. I would assume he's going to get one of these spot starts just to see what he's got, to see what he's learned in Milwaukee in the new system since coming over to join the organization. So curious to see there if this isn't a band-aid of a solution for the third pairing, to see what can happen there, because as we all know, it's been pretty rough with the third pairing this season, which has been before, but it stands out more when a team is losing like this. Usually the third pairing, yes, you're sticking the guys that aren't the best on the third pairing because you can't put all your money into the third pairing unless you have the nice part of having a Dante Fabbro on there, a rookie who has a lot of talent protecting him on the third pairing, but they can't do that right now and protect a young defenseman on third pairing. You have veteran guys out there that just aren't up to par, and when it comes to matchups, especially on the road, you can have some pretty good talent going on against your third pairing, and that's just spelling for disaster.
So I was looking at this earlier today in terms of where did this go wrong in terms of the last couple weeks. At what point did that good vibe of October shift? And Justin, I keep pointing back to the third period of Halloween night against the Calgary Flames. The Preds are up 4-1. You are on the verge of going 9-3-1. And you're feeling really good about yourself. You had won four straight games going into that game. And Calgary scores three goals. They tie it at four. You take the lead with less than 2 minutes to go with Austin Watson scoring again in that game. Calgary then responds and ties it before the end of regulation and then Matthew Tkachuk wins it on potentially the goal of the year to beat the buzzer in overtime. And really, ever since the start of that third period, this team has not looked the same for whatever reason. When you think of the five periods leading up to that one period back on Halloween night, they completely dominated the Hawks. And then the first two periods of that Calgary game, they were doing the same exact thing to the Flames that night. Ever since that point, that was the first game of this seven-game stretch in which they've lost six of seven. Ever since the start of that third period against the Calgary Flames, the Preds have been outscored 31-18. And Pekka-Rinne has a save percentage of .815 since the start of that third period. And I kind of go back and pinpoint that being a turning point early on in this season. And I can't really put my finger on why it all turned on a dime in that game. I don't know if they took their foot off the gas. I don't know why it's turned on a dime since then. I don't know if they lost some confidence out of that game, because they were playing with nothing but confidence before that third period against the Flames.
And there's just been cases of confidence since then. I mean, they had some moments where they looked really good against the New York Rangers as well, and they've a hot goaltender stopped them. Obviously Detroit, but it's Detroit. Then against Colorado. I mean, they had a lead. They had a lead in that game.
They led 3-2 early in the second.
In the second, it wasn't even like it was an early lead in the first. They led in the second period.
And then if you take a little 20-minute nap on the couch that late at night, you wake up and it's 8-3.
Right, and then they look good at times against San Jose. I mean, they got a point against San Jose. And on the road and at the Shark Tank, a point is good. And then against Vancouver, they had times when they looked good. But they have not played a complete-looking game where they've looked dominant, to where they look so fast that a team can't keep up like they were earlier in the season, where they were just flying out of the gates, to where they're controlling the puck and not allowing the opposing team to get the double-digit shots until midway through the second period or the third period. And they're just peppering the goalie with shots from high-danger areas, from everywhere they can, generating opportunities, being creative, having plenty of power play goals, things like that. We haven't seen that really since then, aside from the Detroit game. But again, I think that's an asterisk because it's Detroit. Not to discredit that win, because it was a big win, but they are supposed to beat a really bad team. All the other teams they faced have had pretty good talent. I mean, Vancouver, up and coming, lots of good young talent. Colorado, even without Rantanen, good.
And Landeskog.
Good team. Backup goaltender, good team. San Jose still has plenty of talent on that roster. Chicago still has plenty of good young talent and veteran talent as well that we've seen. So that's why you kind of pushed the Detroit game aside, but they haven't looked dominant like they did earlier in the season. And this is not the next couple weeks are not easy.
Nope.
I mean, you have two division games, Vancouver again. You play St. Louis with a day in between. Vegas, Carolina, who's really good. Florida, who's been good this season. They close out November really tough. It is a good strength of schedule.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're going for the college football playoff.
Well, and yeah, exactly. And if you even go into the start of December, the first game in December is home against Tampa Bay.
Right.
Who they typically beat, but still, tough game. And the other thing that has kind of come to mind for me in this seven-game stretch is, you know, the last few years, there's always been something that has gone terribly wrong for this Preds team, and it hasn't improved all that much throughout the season, right? They've been really good in other areas, but there's always that one thing that seems to fester with this team, right? One year it was 3-on-3 overtime. They couldn't buy a win in 3-on-3. Then the next year, too many penalties. They were by far the most penalized team in the National Hockey League. Last year, you have the power play, ranked last. This year, this team defense, 22 goals allowed in the last four games. Are we going to be railing on this defense and maybe even the penalty kill all season long? I hope not.
Oh, I hope not.
But that in itself, the fact that there's always one thing, and I think you can say that about a lot of different teams in the National Hockey League. No one's perfect, but that to me is a little bit of a disturbing trend, and hopefully they can correct that moving forward. And it seems correctable. It really does. But you've got to have all 20, really all 18 skaters, but all 20 pulling rope in the same direction so that that team defense on a nightly basis is playing the way it should.
And I'll throw this out there, and we talked about a penalty box radio before. I really, really would like to see a move made, unless, you know, a Steven Santini comes up and surprises, but I'd rather see a move made for a veteran defenseman to play in the second pair where you can put Dante Fabro back with a Dan Hamm who's in the third pairing. And it's nothing against Dante Fabro. It's in order to let him season a little bit better and to protect him a little bit more to really get into it, third pairing would be so much better. And you can see just the confidence level overall because he's not even playing the penalty kill yet. He's playing top 4 minutes on the second pairing.
Mm-hmm.
He's not getting the special teams play yet. And it's because he's still making some rookie mistakes. And that's okay. He's a young defenseman with, 30 games in the NHL under his belt. So it's okay that he's making rookie mistakes, but I'd rather him make rookie mistakes on the third pairing and not the second pairing.
Mm-hmm.
And just to give him some more time and leeway and not have all that pressure on of, you got to play second pairing minutes right now. I mean, Seth Jones had that opportunity playing the third pairing before, and it helped him a lot. Even though he got railed on by Preds fans for some odd reason, it allowed him to develop a little bit better by playing more protected minutes, to play 12, 13 minutes instead of playing 18, 19, or even more on that second pairing. So that's one of those things I'd like to see made to help solidify that team defense, because it is struggling right now. They really, really are.
Jeremy Kagover and I discussed this last Wednesday at Scouts Pub in Franklin of how are you going to address the defense at some point this season. And I do think at some point you find a veteran rental defenseman that can come in and stabilize things.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's your idea of putting Fabro on the third pair or have that veteran defenseman stabilize the third pair,
sure,
so that it's not a liability.
Sure.
Because right now it is a liability. Wednesday night, Smashville Live, Brewhouse South in Cool Springs, 7 to 8 p.m. Two players will be in attendance. Number 64, Mikhail
Glenlund.
And number 74... UC Saros. So, Mikhail
Glenlund
and UC Saros will be there in attendance. Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. Be there or be square. Coming up next, Kevin Olszewski, TSN 1290 in Winnipeg, is going to give us an update on the Winnipeg Jets, and we'll go around the Central Division as well. That's coming up next on Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Ryan Porth, Justin Bradford here with you, Preds Insiders, on this Monday evening. Tomorrow night, the Preds host the Winnipeg Jets, the first meeting this season between the Preds and Jets. Pregame at 6, puck drop at 7. All the action heard right here, ESPN 102.5 The Game. And Kevin Olszewski is a host on TSN 1290 up in Winnipeg, and Kevin joins us now. Kevin, how we doing?
Doing fantastic, guys. Happy to be part of the show.
Yeah, well, thank you for joining us, and I think we all kind of wrote off the Jets maybe a little too early. They've won 6 of their last 8 games after all the offseason. I don't know if you would put it as turmoil or distractions, but the Jets do seem to be playing better hockey of late.
They certainly do, and yes, you'll need a program to figure out who's playing on the blue line for the Winnipeg Jets in Bridgestone Arena tomorrow night. There was massive turnover. It's a different-looking team. They play a different way, and through the first 10 games of the season, oh boy, there were some nervous times of, are they ever going to figure this out? Have they just lost way too much talent? But slowly but surely, they're starting to turn a corner here, we think, but they're not doing things pretty. It's ugly. They are grinding. They're not the high-flying offensive juggernaut that they were at one point, and they're not the big, bad, strong Jets. I'm really interested to see how they match up with the Preds tomorrow, because we all know what we expect between these two teams, what we've seen before in the past. It's a different dynamic with this particular group.
Well, it's also a little bit of a different dynamic for the Nashville Predators as well, with PK Subban going out, Matt Duchene coming in. So it should be interesting to see, like you said, the matchup between the Preds and Jets tomorrow night here in Nashville.
And just the list of just unbelievable things that have happened to the Winnipeg Jets. Dustin Byfuglien maybe deciding to retire, then having secret surgery. He's left from the club, still on the suspended list. His status is way up in the air. We know what a big part of everything the Jets do and so much of their identity comes from Big Buff. And then they have the strange Brian Little is injured, gets concussed in the last preseason game against Minnesota. Then he comes back. He's a point-of-game player in that second-line center hole that the Jets are always trying to fill. And Nikolaj Ehlers, accidentally fires a puck, a slap shot right to the ear, shatters his eardrum. He's got vertigo symptoms. He's out. So this has prompted all kinds of changes within the top six. You got Blake Wheeler, your top right winger, a 91-point guy the last two seasons with Mark Scheifele, dynamic duo, now centering the second line. So it's a completely different look.
So, Kevin, you mentioned Dustin Byfuglien. What would you say the odds are that he actually plays in a Jets uniform this season?
Oh, wow, that is a tough question.
That's why I asked it.
The odds are 40-60, maybe 30-70, I would say, that he actually returns. Depends on the health of his ankle, and it's hilarious, right, in this day and age of social media. Well, anybody sees Dustin Byfuglien anywhere in Manitoba, in the province, within the city limits, they're snapping a picture of him. He's been, now we get pictures sent to us at the station. Here's Dustin Byfuglien in a walking boot. He was out deer hunting because that's the kind of guy Byfuglien is. He's tough enough to do that on one leg. This has got to be a good sign. He's smiling in the picture. Let's read into it that everything's going to work itself out and he's going to be back. The reality is nobody knows. The Jets are not saying anything as an organization. There's clearly some issues between the NHL Players Association and the league about this. I guess issue is how we will describe it, and what is at issue. We don't have all the details. We're all speculating. We're all guessing. Everybody, including Jets management, wants Dustin Byfuglien back. We think that's the reason. But right now, without him in the lineup, they don't have his services, and they're $7.6 million in cap space in limbo. They have to hold off in case he walks back in that door so they can't use it. But it sits on the cap, on cap friendly. It looks like they're in fine shape as far as the cap goes. But they're handcuffed. They can't add more pieces to make up for that player lost in their lineup. So it's a tough spot.
Once again, Kevin Olszewski, TSN 1290 Winnipeg, joining us on Preds Insiders. So sticking with the blue line, off-season trade, Jacob Trouba, Neil Pionk. Seems like Pionk, young defenseman, has come in and really stepped up and doing well for this Winnipeg Jets team, but it's a name that's probably not going to be too familiar with those in Nashville, even though he's in his third pro season with the NHL. Just what have you seen out of him, and how is he helping stabilize that blue line that has lost so much?
He's been the biggest surprise, and thank goodness for him, because otherwise they would be in a real bad way on the back end. And I don't think anybody really knew what to make of him after one complete season with the New York Rangers. His analytics numbers, terrible with New York last year. Now, they were, you know, obviously a lottery team, and we know where they ended up. He was playing on the top pairing with Mark Stahl, which wasn't a good spot for a young player. Every time Paul Maurice talks about him, he just says, we saw tape on him. We liked what he did. He's a really dynamic skater, and he can move the puck. He plays with confidence, and they thought in the Jets system he would be the perfect player, and their gamble or their research has paid off. He's contributing. He's stabilized that second pairing. He's playing with Dmitry Kulikov right now, who is a bit of an adventure on most nights. We call him Chaos Kulikov because he causes chaos in both directions.
I like it.
He leads the team in minor penalties, so you're always a little nervous when he's out there. He's playing more minutes than you would probably like, but because Pionk has been kind of so stable and adding to the offense, it's been a pretty serviceable pairing.
And now Patrick Laine. I know this is a guy, he gets brought up.
Our assist machine, he's a secret weapon in Nashville. He's not shooting the puck. Oh, no, all he does is pass it now this year, guys.
Yeah, I think all I had to say was Patrick Laine. I knew it was going to trigger some sort of response because it seems like there's such a question mark around this guy because he has so much talent, and he's still young, only 21 years old, but so much is expected out of him in terms of where he was drafted, what he's capable of doing, and he's an assist machine with only 4 goals. What is expected out of him, and what does this team want out of him, and what do you seen out of his play so far this season?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that his overall play, like last year, there was long stretches where he was a liability in his own end. Everybody got a book on him in the league that if you get on him and pressure him in the defensive zone. He's going to turn the puck over. He's going to cough it up, and boom, you've got all kinds of possession time and probably a scoring chance or two. And you know, his plus minus always like deep in the negatives. And it was fact that he hadn't rounded out his game by the end of last season. Actually, as painful as it was, because he wasn't scoring, so everybody's worried about where the offense had dried up to. He was actually playing a pretty decent game in the first round series against the St. Louis Blues. He might have been one of the Jets' best forwards, and he was using his 6'5" frame, finally, being a physical power forward. That's what they think he could be. So on nights when he wasn't scoring and he wasn't getting that shot on the power play, he was at least contributing and digging pucks out. This year, since he came back and signed the contract late, missed most of the training camp, as did Kyle Connor, he came right back into camp and said, I'm going to score a lot of goals and everything's going to be all right and I can't wait to get back. So great, he comes out, he scores a couple, but he didn't have a power play goal until last week, and he got his patented one-timer against the Dallas Stars. It's the only power play goal he scored this year. But now he's often the first player on the forecheck, which is amazing, and he's winning puck battles along the wall. He's only 21, but I think that 3 years of experience, he puts himself in better spots to set up his teammates. And one of the reasons that he so-called held out, or one of the issues him and his representation had, was that he wanted to play on the top unit. He wanted to be on the top line, and he's playing with Mark Scheifele now. Scheifele and Wheeler are split, and Kyle Connor's on the other side. And the other night in Florida, he had 3 assists, and primary assists where he was the guy driving the play. So as much as the scoring hasn't been there, the Jets doing some real weird things with their power play right now that you guys are going to be like, what's going on here? Patrick Laine's on their second unit of their power play. It's mind-boggling, but it's been working as of late, so they've kind of split and tried to balance out their two units, and he's not getting as much power play time, so we haven't seen the goals that we expect from him. But he's overall playing a better game.
Kevin Olszewski is with TSN 1290 in Winnipeg. He has been our guest. Kevin, thank you so much for joining us, and I'm sure we'll talk to you later this season.
Looking forward to another good one between the Preds and the Jets. Thanks, guys.
For sure. Thank you. Kevin Olszewski, TSN 1290 up in Winnipeg. Tomorrow night, the Preds and Jets getting after it. Pre-game at 6, puck drop at 7. Justin, I'll be interested to see how the Preds respond from Saturday night's loss, 7-2 to the Chicago Blackhawks. You have another division rival coming into your barn. A division rival where you've had a lot of epic meetings with over the last couple years. I kind of think this is a response type game for the Preds. They have to respond in a pretty big way. Not to say that they have to beat them in, you know, beat them by 4 or 5 goals, but I would be disappointed if they came out flat and lost again tomorrow night against the Jets.
You know, I've been waiting for a response since November 7th.
That's fair.
There's been 3 games where they've had an opportunity to respond, and they haven't yet. Respond. Prove people wrong. Prove that you have a fight in this. It's up to them. It's up to them as a team to come out and respond. It doesn't matter how well the Winnipeg Jets are playing or anything like that. They know what they're capable of doing. Everyone's seen what they're capable of doing. Respond. And that's all they really have to do is respond. If they come out a little bit flat, it's on them. Then you really start to question things because of how important the end of this November is and the beginning of December. Respond.
Well, and respond for the full 60 and not just the first 10.
Right. Put the pressure on. They know they're capable. They have the talent to do this. Go out there and take it.
Despite playing the fewest games in the Central Division, they are currently in 6th place. They are as close to Minnesota as they are Colorado.
Minnesota.
That's not a great feeling at this point in the season, but it is early. Even though these last 7 games have been a struggle for them, we're only 1/4 of the way through the regular season. Still plenty of time for them to try to figure it out. And speaking of trying to figure it out, which Preds players need to step up to get this team back on track? Justin and I will debate that coming up next. Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio. You can hear him Wednesdays 7 to 8 p.m. actually 8 to 9 p.m. I just changed the time slot on you, Justin. That's not the first time I have done that, by the way, when you have been in here with Preds Insiders. 8 to 9 p.m. every Wednesday, Penalty Box Radio. Preds Insiders brought to you every Monday and Wednesday by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry. For all your dental needs, visit KellyERice.com. Nashville's number one Ford dealer, Wyatt Johnson Ford, Kerry Zier Remax Elite, and Geno's East on the corner of 3rd Avenue and Korean Veterans Boulevard, downtown Nashville. More Preds Insiders coming up next. ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders. Ryan Porth alongside Justin Bradford on this Monday evening. Preds and Jets tomorrow night at Bridgestone Arena. Pregame at 6, puck drop at 7. Justin, the Preds made an announcement earlier today. Bridgestone Arena will host the 2020 U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame game between the University of North Dakota and Penn State University, October 17th, 2020.
That's exciting. That's going to be fun. And Preds prospect on North Dakota. Great Mismash.
Great name.
Mismash. Mismash.
Yes. I wonder if he's a mismash for the opposition.
Boom, boom, ba-doom.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. But still, that is going to be a lot of fun. So much college hockey coming because the Women's Showcase, the Country Classic coming to Ford Ice Center, Bellevue.
Yes.
Thanksgiving weekend as well. Some powerhouse women's college hockey teams. So I love that people are making Nashville a destination for hockey. It just shows how much Nashville's become as a destination for hockey.
Well, hopefully this is – hopefully as a hockey city, we can knock it out of the park with not only the Country Classic coming up in a couple weeks, but the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame game next October, to the point where the NCAA sits back and says, look, let's take a Frozen Four to Smashville. Yeah.
Man, that'd be something.
How cool would that be?
Be all about that.
I know you would.
Oh, yeah.
I like college hockey, but I don't think I like college hockey as much as you do.
We got to get you to a game. I think you would. You'd love the atmosphere.
I know.
It's like college football.
I've been to a Miami, Ohio game. I saw Riley Smith score a hat trick against Danny DeKaiser's Western Michigan Broncos.
Oh, man.
Like 3 or 4 years ago. Maybe 4 years ago. The best man at my wedding went to Miami. So I was up there. We went to a hockey game. It was incredible. It was a great atmosphere.
We got to get you an Ivy game or like Michigan, Minnesota, Wisconsin.
UAH,
we got to get you down there.
I mean,
there.
It's just a short drive.
Short drive, yeah. But fun atmospheres, and you're seeing future stars. That's what's fun about them for me. And plus, you have a pep band going. And so some of these schools do a great job of making a fun college hockey atmosphere, just like college football. So,
So North Dakota, Penn State.
Be fun.
That should be a lot of fun next October. That announcement coming down today. Bridgestone Arena will be the host of that next October. So, Justin, Bridgestone Arena will be the host of Preds Jets tomorrow. And this is a really key stretch. It really started Saturday with the key stretch that they're in. Chicago, Winnipeg, Vancouver, home and home with St. Louis, Vegas, some tough Eastern Conference games against Carolina, Florida, and Tampa Bay. This is a really important stretch where the Preds will be tested for sure. So in your mind, Justin, who's maybe one player that you think of on this Preds roster in the lineup that you think really needs to step up for the Preds to take that next step and get back on track?
Mikael Glenlund.
Why?
He needs to produce. I mean, and he's been a slow starter other times in his career, but 6 points in 19 games. When he's had the opportunity playing top six, he's got to produce more. And he's done some good things, but he's not doing so many things that are considered high-danger opportunities, high-danger passes, high-danger shots. He has to produce. And he's been a producer before. I mean, he had two straight years, 69, 67 points. And then in his trade year, fell a little bit. We all know he had dealt with the birth of his child, getting married, traded on that day as well. But he's capable of being a 60-plus point player, and he needs to be. He has the talent, and you see flashes of it, but he's one of those players that would solidify the top six in terms of wingers, and that's what we all kind of thought coming in. Okay, you got your Ryan Johansson, your Philip Forsberg, Victor Arvidsson, and Matt Duchene, even if you throw Kyle Turris in there, and then you have Mikael Glenlund, that's a good top six, or even a Craig Smith up there with Matt Duchene centering, if you want to do that as a top six. But then with Glenlund not performing the way he needs to perform to finish and produce points, that is hurting the team overall offensively because they're having to shift him. He's playing fourth line minutes. He shouldn't be playing fourth line because he's not a fourth line player. He should be in the top six, but he has to produce in order to earn that top six role.
I look at a player like Victor Arvidsson.
Sure.
Victor Arvidsson, I don't think, has looked like the same player that we saw last year when he broke the single season goal record in Preds history. I don't know what it is. He does have 6 goals and 13 points in 19 games. Not horrible numbers by any stretch of the imagination. But I do think there's another gear to Arvidsson's game that he has not reached yet this season. And if practice lines from earlier today are any indication, it does look like the Jofa line is going to be put back together for tomorrow night's game against the Jets. Forsberg, Johansson, Arvidsson. I'd like to see that next level that we know that Victor Arvidsson has in him.
No, I agree. And I think what's actually hurt him a little bit is not being out there with Philip Forsberg as much. George Mataragas, who does the analytics for Penalty Box Radio, tracks a lot of this. He's individually tracking the games. And Philip Forsberg's been the key. If you're out there with Philip Forsberg, you're going to do well offensively because he drives possession, he maintains possession, and Arvidsson needs that possession to be able to get to the net, get a rebound goal, even on the rush, to have those slap shots like we've seen him score on so much before. But Philip Forsberg's the key. That's why Jofa's done so well before. Philip Forsberg. And a healthy Philip Forsberg, you have him out there with Arvidsson, that could be the key to get him into his next gear again. So we shall see.
Victor Arvidsson had 5 goals in his first 9 games this season. He has 1 goal in his last 10 games.
You know, the team overall hasn't been doing that well in the past few, so.
Well, I mean, that does include the tail end of
exactly. That
very good stretch.
That's true.
But Victor Arvidsson, he scored 2 goals at home against the Anaheim Ducks back on October 22nd. Just 1 goal since then. Scored the lone goal in the 2-1 loss against the New York Rangers a couple weeks ago. I think the two of us would both agree as well. Whoever's in net, we want to see that other level from them as well.
Absolutely.
That's not to say that this recent stretch is on the goaltending, whether it's Pecorine or UC Saros. UC Saros has been playing better in recent starts. But Pecorine, I mentioned the stat earlier this evening. Since the start of the third period on Halloween night against the Calgary Flames, he has an .815 save percentage. And that's not to say that all the goals that have been scored on him are on him, but there have been some goals where you're thinking, what, like, how? That includes the Brent Seabrook goal the other night to make it 3-0. That includes a couple of those goals in Colorado, even though that was a tire fire of a performance from 1 through 20. And even dating back to that Calgary game in the third period, there were some goals that he let up that were pretty leaky. Whatever's going on with Pecorine, and you would like to see another level from UC Saros as well, but the goaltending just as a whole can be better.
Oh, it absolutely can be. And it's tough to come in relief as a goaltender because you know your team's already behind. So at UC Saros, he let in a few goals, but it's hard to come in. You're not warmed up properly. You have to come in. You know you're fighting. You don't have a lead. So we've seen him come in for spot duty in relief, and it's obviously not gone well. In his starts, he's done a little bit better. That's what you want to see, but there's something with the tracking that has just been off. And it's, again, the team in front's got to play better. The team defense to not allow so many high-danger opportunities to happen against their goaltenders like that. But the goaltenders have got to be better. And I know people comment about that people are too scared to call goaltending. But no, I'm not scared to call goaltending because it's got to be better. It's got to be better. That's the goaltending is the way of the Preds. Goaltending goes over well. You have strong games. It puts them in position to win games. Because if at least you give the goaltenders a lead, they're usually holding on. That hasn't been the case in a lot of these games. I mean, the Calgary game, Colorado game, things like that. But give them a lead to play with. Usually they'll do a little bit better, but they've got to be more solid in front of them. But the goaltenders have got to step up and make it to another level. I don't know if it's one of those things where it's just, hey, you know, we're going to sit back a little bit mentally, like in the back of their head. They're not obviously thinking, oh, we can sit back. But I don't know if after that strong start, it's more of you get a little too relaxed, a little too comfortable. And you got to find that other gear again and realize that it is a long season. So there's something mentally going on to got to kick them back into gear, snap them back into it, because you can just tell something's just a little bit off by half a second.
Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio, thank you, sir, as always.
Thank you.
For Justin Bradford, I'm Ryan Porth. Stay tuned. Slapshot Radio coming up at 8 o'clock, but coming up next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, it is the Rick Stockstill Show. Stay tuned.